You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to Real Talk with me, Mason Bray. Today, I continue my Broadway Talk series, so let's get to that interview. So, we have Kevin Roach, who is the Artistic Director at Evansville Civic Theater. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
How are you?
I am doing well, though I wish I could be more creative right now.
Do you want to tell all the listeners more who you are?
Well, my name is Kevin Roach. I started out acting many, many years ago and kind of fell into directing after a while. I was doing shows both here in Evansville. I've done shows in Bloomington, Indianapolis, Owensboro, Kentucky, and as far as directing theater, my career kind of started because I had to step in a couple different times with a couple different groups because a director had dropped out and they wanted somebody to step in. And that's kind of where I got my education, if you will, when it comes to directing theater is less from formal education and more from just the experience of it. And now I am the managing artistic director of the Evansville Civic Theater, one of Indiana's oldest and longest running community theaters.
So as the artistic director, what do you do?
Right now, I am in charge of pretty much everything. I have a board of directors that is above me. They're a volunteer board of directors because we are a not-for-profit theater. And I manage the day-to-day of the theater. You know, I go in, I make sure bills get paid. I call possible sponsors, things like that. The managerial side of it all. But the fun I have is when I get to actually direct the shows because it's up to me to help along with the committee pick shows for a season that we think are going to really entice an audience and then also bring those shows to life with my creativity and my own touch.
What's the hardest part of your job?
The hardest part of my job is it fluctuates. It's so different. Right now, with everything going on, it's the managerial aspect of it. It's trying to make decisions that are best for the theater. And honestly, I guess that is the hardest part overall. It's just you want to do what's best for the theater, but you also want to do what's best for the community because you want to bring them entertainment that they're going to enjoy and a nice mix of entertainment that they're going to enjoy. And because those people that come, they come regularly. They are your people. They are the theater's people. And, you know, we value what they want and what they enjoy. So that's difficult. I get to have more fun kind of on the directing end. There's not a whole lot of stress that goes into that because I do consider myself a very creative person. And directing is where I get to just be myself and have fun and get crazy.
Working at a well-known old theater, what's the biggest challenge you have?
Keeping the theater going, I think, would be the biggest challenge I have. And I know that sounds silly or simple, but, you know, the theater's been around for so very, very long. It was started back in 1925, I believe, by Frances Golden, her family was a very well-known family of actors. They ended up settling in New Harmony, and she started, I believe it was called the Evansville Players, and it eventually merged into the Evansville Civic Theater. And fun anecdote, just quickly, she was born on September the 7th, and I was born on the 8th. But since then, there's been so many different people that have come in and brought their own flair. The longest running managing artistic director that was there was Dick Ingbers. He was there for almost 30 years, if I understand it. And, you know, he really kept that theater going and alive. And then after me, there's been a couple. There's been Lynn Kincaid, Chris Tyner, you know. And so I'm following a big legacy and I have a lot to live up to. And sometimes they do come to the shows and it makes me nervous because it's, you know, I value their input. This is an organization that they kept alive for such a long time. And that's what I want to do is I want to make sure that the Civic Theater survives for many years to come.
So when you're on the directing side and you're casting a show, what do you look for in people auditioning?
The biggest thing that I look for in people auditioning and the most generic thing I can say is I look for people that aren't afraid to have fun, to own it, as I call it. Nothing is more off-putting to a director than somebody who comes in very nervous, very stiff. You know, obviously I don't judge people for that because it is a very nerve-wracking experience, but I'm looking for somebody that walks in and has that attitude of, you know what, I've got this. And there's a difference between confidence, what I say, the difference between confidence and cockiness. Cockiness is saying, I'm better than everybody in this room. Confidence is just saying, you know what, I've got this. An old friend once told me, and I tell people this now, that even if you don't get the part, when you walk up there and you're reading those lines or you're doing that monologue for a brief moment, you are that character. You get to play that part. And so even if you don't make it, you had your moment. You had your, you know, brief moment on stage. And who knows, that moment might lead to something down the line, whether it be with the same theater or others. But I'm looking for people that aren't afraid to take risks, that aren't afraid to kind of put their fears aside and say, you know what, I may look silly, I may look stupid, I may look way too energetic, but I'm just going to give it my all because I've got this. That's what I'm generally looking for.
What is something that you don't like to see at an audition?
One of the things that I take into consideration from is that I tell people, you are being watched from the moment you get there. And that's absolutely true. From the moment you walk into the building, I know it may not seem like I'm paying attention to people, but I am absolutely paying attention to you from the moment you walk in. And one of the things that I really don't like to see is people that treat other people condescendingly, people who have that I'm better than everybody else here kind of attitude. Because, you know, yes, of course, there may be people with different talent levels or different experience levels, but we're all in the same playing field right now. And I definitely don't like to see people that just exude that better than thou attitude. And I'm observing that not only when they're on the stage reading, but how they interact with other people. I know when I go to audition, I either talk to people and kind of introduce myself, or kind of sit away off to the side. I don't want to risk ever seeming rude by any means whatsoever. So, you know, I can tell the difference between somebody who is just kind of sitting back and observing and then somebody who really is looking down on everybody there. That's why I always try, if somebody new comes in, I always make it a point to shake their hand and introduce myself if I've never met them before, or at the very least wave to them and introduce myself, because how they respond to me is going to tell me a lot.
So the audition is over. What is your process of getting the cast list out in like 2 weeks?
2 weeks is about as long as it normally takes for me. Some people can crank those out in a couple of days. I really can't. People have actually seen this before, and I wish I could say this was figuratively, but I fan all of the audition sheets out like a deck of cards on the floor. And if you were to get an aerial shot of me looking at audition sheets, it would be hilarious because it's just like piles of paper everywhere. And I will sit on the floor and with my notebook and start going through my notes and like putting things in different piles. And it's not necessarily this person was good and this person was not, but looking at my notes and being like, I liked this person, but only for these kinds of roles, put them in a pile. You know, this person has too many conflicts. I don't think I can work with them, put them in a pile. And I think I posted a picture one time to my Instagram and I got a bunch of likes and I think people thought I was being silly, but I'm like, no, that was actually how it looked. I just laid down and posted a picture. There were papers everywhere. And I'm a very visual person. So, you know, when I take notes, I take very meticulous notes that if anybody else looked at them, they would not understand them. They would think I'm crazy. But those notes come in handy when I'm looking directly at the sheets because I never write on their sheets. And so I can much easier kind of put my notes into perspective with their sheet right in front of me, if that makes sense.
What show are you most proud of?
Oh, goodness. There are probably, let's see, there are several shows I'm most proud of. And coincidentally enough, every year, at least at Civic, we try to do shows that are based off of a piece of literature, classic literature, or sometimes a show that is a classic show in and of itself. Lately, it's been literature. And those have always ended up kind of being my favorites. And even ones that didn't fall in that category, we did an Agatha Christie murder mystery called And Then There Were None. And that's a show that typically what was frightening then is not necessarily frightening now because we've been so desensitized to what is frightening because of horror films, because of plays. And so a lot of times when that's presented, it's presented almost in a comedic manner because of the way it reads. What read very well and very scary in the 1930s may not read as well today. So my challenge was to take that show and make it genuinely frightening again without changing anything that Agatha Christie did to it. Just give it my own flair. But that show, and then there were none, along with The Crucible. The Crucible is one of my absolute favorite shows. Really, really proud of that one. I had to end up actually stepping into that one because we had an actor drop out very last minute and had a book in my hand. And eventually, after several performances, I kind of got off book. But it was also coincidentally the same role I played in high school, so it wasn't super, super difficult. But that was a show that has such a deeper meaning beyond the Salem Witch Trials. And so I really enjoyed how that one turned out. And Lord of the Flies, I was really proud of that one. You were in that one. That one actually is probably the last show that I did that I was just genuinely, genuinely enthralled with how it came out, because it came out exactly how I had pictured it in my mind. And, you know, it was, here's a piece of literature, here's a play of a piece of literature that has kind of simplified this very, very long story. And I presented it in a way that was just as uncomfortable as the book was, and was just as emotionally challenging as the book was. And, you know, that, and all of these, it's not just me doing it. It's the cast that I pick. It's the people that I pick that really bring these things to life. I'll always have a very, very special place in my heart for Peter and the Starcatcher. It's the first show that I did at Civic as artistic director. And I had done a couple shows before then on contract just to come in and direct a show. But that was my first show being hired as artistic director. So there'll always be a place in my heart for that because it was such a beautiful show. And then I also work with high schoolers at Mount Vernon High School. And there's a lot of shows there that I'm very, very proud of. We did, you know, we did the Scottish play Macbeth, and I was really proud of how that turned out. Those kids really tackled Shakespeare, and a lot of them had never touched Shakespeare before. And we recently just did a show called Trap.
I have the playbill up here somewhere, right there.
Yes, that one was a show that, you know, I read it, I loved it, but I knew that it could either be one of two things. It could end up being hokey and silly, or it could end up being really, really good. And I had seen a couple different versions of it that erred on the side of almost being silly. And my goal was to make it absolutely terrifying without changing anything.
It was terrifying.
Well, and the playwright actually reached out to us, not to me directly because I'm just a drama coach, but reached out to the head of the theater department and said that he was very pleased with how we went the extra effort to kind of keep the show a secret and promote it and the viral marketing that we did for it. And so that was a lot of fun. And I know I'm rambling, but these are shows that just when I think about them, they bring back extremely fond memories.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So when do you start planning for a season with the board?
We start planning usually when the current season begins. You know, when we start a new season, we're already having meetings discussing the next season. We have six shows to pick, and then we do six shows on our main stage, and then we do four shows on our what we call our underground series, which is the underground series is the shows that we might not be able to stage on the Civic main stage because of content, whether that be, you know, language or adult content of any form. Not to say that we don't have that in some shows on our stage, but we try not to do the plays that are more rated R, but the underground series kind of allows us to do that. And those are shows that are usually done at an alternate space, very minimal cast, minimal setting. We let the story tell itself. And I don't direct those, but I've actually acted in several of them over the years. And that's been a lot of fun. Right now, with everything that's going on in the world, we're currently kind of regathering our group and kind of relooking at our season that we had planned planned originally to see how we can bring theater to the masses, but maybe on a smaller scale, or maybe in an alternate space, whether that be outdoors or whatever, or when we can start doing shows again. So it's an ever-going process.
What are you looking forward to when restrictions lift?
Doing shows again. There's so much that I want to do, and I'm a creative person by nature. And so, you know, I've had to kind of improvise and do things at home. Like, I'm an actor at heart. I always tell people I'm a director, but I'm an actor first. And so I've done a lot of audio things. I need to do more of them. I've done, you know, tried to get other people to submit videos. I'm memorizing monologues right now that I'm going to perform. And so, you know, I'm just looking forward to getting back into the arts.
So I've asked this to everyone, but what do you think is more important, education or experience in a career path like yours?
Well, I've listened to some of your guests answer this question, and I'm going to have to be the one again to say it's a give and take, and there's a little bit of both. I don't necessarily believe that you have to have a college degree to get where you're at. I mean, obviously, I'm just the managing artistic director of a small community theater in Evansville, Indiana, but I know people that are working professionally that never finish school for acting. And that's not to say don't go to school for acting, because that might be where you get a lot of training, but I have to agree with David Mamet, who says that, you know, actors, we are a generation that want to stay in school. We want that piece of paper. And there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes people like me, when I was in college, I ended up having to leave because of financial hardships with my family. But I just kept doing and doing and doing and doing and acting and acting and acting and acting. And I learned more by doing that than I ever did in my time at school. So it's a little bit of both. Now that being said, you know, if I were to pack up now and move to a different city or get a job in a different city, you can bet I'm going to be taking classes on directing or classes on acting, because you are never done learning. You're always taking in new things. I mean, even myself, I've learned what works and what doesn't. And the director I was, you know, 4 years ago is not necessarily the director I am now. He's not necessarily the director I'll be next year, because I'm always learning. And some of that is other director friends of mine kind of picking their brain and asking them. So, you know, I would actually love to take classes sometime and learn. But, you know, you want to learn. And whatever that means for you, do it. You know, if you want to go to college and you want to study and you want to get a degree in theater, go for it. Absolutely. Because there are going to be some times that is going to pay off. There are going to be some professional gigs that are going to look for that, but not always. But I always encourage, like my students at my high school, if you find training, if you find experience, or you find opportunity to do things, do them. Take those classes, be in those shows, be the character that has one line. Because, you know, I had a student that after they graduated, they only got a very small part in a college show. And I said, it doesn't matter. You got a part. You get to actually sit back and watch how the director directs and how other people work. You know, how lucky for you and fortunate for you. So you're always learning. You're always picking up things.
So you mentioned doing audio work. What else are you doing during quarantine, or anything?
Right now, I've got a fun new microphone and I'm just playing with it. I've done some reading of some children's books. I just released the other day a reading of a chapter out of the novelization of Night of the Living Dead. I'm a horror buff. And Simon & Schuster has allowed the reading and public posting of small portions. So I just did chapter one, just to kind of play with it a little bit. But I would really love, and again, this goes back to I'm an actor first, I would really love to get my voice out there, get it heard, and maybe someday find my path in voiceover or something like that. You know, I listened to a seminar where a professional voice actor was talking about how he got started. And one of the things he said, this doesn't happen for everybody, but he got started by accident. He had recorded some things and put them online, and a local company reached out to him and was like, we'll pay you to be the voiceover for our commercial. And he said it just snowballed from there. And so, yes, it's a big dream, but it's something that who knows what could happen.
That's all I have. Is there anything else you want to tell or talk about?
Well, you were asking me about direction. And one of the things, I actually had this conversation with a friend not too long ago. One of the things that I wish more actors understood about the casting process, and it's something I, as an actor, had to learn the hard way as an actor, but then became a director and realized, oh, what everybody told me was right, is that sometimes you don't get the part, and it's not because you aren't good. Sometimes it's because there was somebody else that just fit that role better. I've literally cast a show before because of somebody's height. I had a show one time where I knew I wanted these two particular characters to be, or two particular actors to be mom and dad. And they were both very, very short people. And then I had to cast their daughter. And I had a few girls that were read really, really well for the part, but two of them were very tall. And I had to have this aesthetic of their daughter needed to look younger than them. And I couldn't visibly do that with somebody that was taller. I mean, is it believable? Yes. But for an audience sitting and watching, their brains are going to associate shorter child, their child, you know? And so, and I actually did have a conversation with the other actresses about it and why I made the decisions I did. I don't always do that, but I wanted to for them to let them know, because they all were excellent at it. I mean, the pros and cons were completely the same for all of them. But sometimes it boils down to, you know, I've had people tell me this for film. You audition for film, sometimes it boils down to you don't have the right hair, or, you know, you're auditioning, you know, and I have done some independent film, nothing major, but I've done some things that are out there. And, you know, I've heard stories of people, actors that said they didn't get the part they wanted because they have a lot of tattoos and they read the best for it, but they needed somebody that didn't have, you know, tattoos on their arm. Or, you know, you didn't get the part because, you know, you didn't, how do I word this? Physically, you didn't seem like you matched the person that you're playing off of. And, you know, I go in blind casting. I never go in with a preconception of, you know, well, I'm going to do this. You know, for instance, I'm going to use the Crucible. Crucible, John Proctor is often, you know, pictured as this very big, imposing figure. And the actor who I had play him, who did very, very well, is a very short guy. And the girl that played his wife is a very, very tall woman. And normally that would kind of be taken into question. I don't want to say it would have excluded them, but at the end of the day, they both read very well for it and played off each other so well that they convinced me this is the right choice. And it ended up being such an interesting dynamic that John Proctor, you know, this big character that's kind of our protagonist of the story, is so much shorter than everybody else that towers over him. And it ended up leading to me playing with that aspect of the judges or the people that thought they were higher than him were always on a platform and always standing above him. And it wasn't until, you know, they were shown for who they really were that they stepped down and he stepped up. And so we ended up playing with height. But there are so many different things that go into casting that actors just don't always understand. And one of the things I've always opened myself up for is, if you want to ask, I will be happy to answer any questions, you know, how to improve your auditioning, or simply just what was the deciding factor. You know, I ended up becoming a friend, but I had a lady that, you know, she didn't get a part and she wanted to know why. And I said, it wasn't because you weren't good. In this case, I just like somebody better. And hence my papers on the floor. You know, I've got two or three girls for one role. And out of all of those, I'm looking at my notes and all my scribbles and circles and underlines. And I find out, you know, I loved all these girls, but I liked this one person better. And it's not that the other two girls were bad. I just like this person better, if that makes sense. So there's a lot that goes into it beyond just, well, I read the part the best. You know, whether it be for film or stage, the director may be looking for a certain physical type. They may be looking for somebody that is a certain height. They may be looking for, and, you know, it might be a case of, can you do the accent that they want, which is never really a big deal for me, but, you know, I've heard of it before. Just, are you what they are looking for? But I don't want that to discourage anyone whatsoever, because, again, going back to the Crucible, you know, I always think of John Proctor as this big imposing figure, and here this very short guy comes in and just knocks it out of the park and convinces me, because he came in with that attitude of, you know what, I got this. and surprised me. And I love, as a director, being surprised by people that come in that just wow me and take me in my mind in a different direction than I was going. Because as you're watching people audition, you do tend to kind of think, okay, that would be nice here, they would fit well here. And then somebody steps up and completely blows it out of the water. And you know, you're like, I wonder if I can dye their hair red, because the character may have to have red hair, but we can always dye their hair, you know. And that's just a random example. But yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for talking to me.
No problem. What's up? Just me here. Sorry about the technical difficulties with my microphone. It sounded like I was on the phone. Sorry about that. Thank you for listening this week. Hope to see you here next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.